Hi everyone, Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the Washington Weekly Podcast on the UBS In The Now podcast channel. Joining us once again for the conversation, as always, glad to welcome back Shane Lieberman, Senior Governmental Affairs Advisor with Governmental Affairs U.S. here at UBS. Shane, thank you for dropping by, spending some time with our listeners, our clients here on this Thursday morning. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me back, Dan. Hope you're doing well.
So to begin, Shane, a lot has been happening on the trade front in recent days since we last spoke last week. Further progress has been made with additional deals announced by the White House this week, along with reports of a potential deal nearing with the European Union. So what's the latest on trade?
That's right. The big one announced this week as of now is a deal with Japan. You know, kind of the headline is that the U.S. will now only impose a tariff of 15%, but what is the U.S. getting in return for, you know, that lower level of tariffs compared to what was threatened earlier? Well, the U.S. is going to get an investment of $550 billion into the U.S. Also, Japan's going to buy reportedly 100 Boeing airplanes. They'll increase their defense spending and a number of other items. I think overall what you're seeing is that this is being very viewed favorably right now. And so I think, you know, there's excitement that this deal was reached. It's probably better than was expected. You know, while Japan is an ally, you know, there were some real tensions on trade. So de-escalation here on the trade front with Japan has been really well received. I do think, though, that 15% tariff rate may, in the long term, you know, be of concern to some lawmakers and how that could impact the economy. So, you know, I think the initial excitement is noteworthy, but we should also be thinking about how it plays out long term. And you're right, you know, a lot of chatter about a deal with the EU next. That would probably be one of the big ones left out there, right? You know, the EU as a bloc is a very large trading partner with the US. So I think that would be the next big domino that we could see. You know, we're just over a week away from that August 1st deadline. I think that would be a focal point for the Trump administration to get that done next. Keep in mind, though, you know, China's on a separate path, and their kind of time frame is, I think, mid-August, August 15th. So I think once we get past the EU, there's still definitely more to come, and we should have that in mind as we, you know, think about trade and how it may impact the markets in the coming days and weeks.
Well, thank you, Shane, for the update, and we will continue to keep our eyes on progress. As you pointed out, that August 1st deadline is quickly approaching. Switching gears a bit to Congress, last week we heard about calls for potential congressional redistricting in Texas, that by the White House, which in turn triggered congressional Democrats floating that possibility for blue states such as California and New York. So where do you see this going, and what's the reason for such efforts?
Yeah, well, good question, and important for kind of the future of the balance of power in Congress. And next week I'll ask you to say redistricting three times fast. In Texas, it's a little bit more straightforward. The Texas legislature has fewer restrictions, and so they have a little bit more latitude and aim to do a redistricting mid-cycle, which they have done previously. And this will help Republicans probably net gain a few seats in the House. Keep in mind that the House is narrowly divided right now. And so it could very easily slip into Democrats' control in the next election. So Republicans are looking for opportunities to try and maintain their power, and Texas is one of their better opportunities to do that by redrawing the lines of, you know, where people vote and who they can vote for. And that could help Republicans gain a few seats there. So Democrats are looking to see where they could, you know, fight fire with fire, if you will, right? And, you know, their two biggest states of California and New York lead to opportunities where if they did redistrict, they could pick up additional seats. However, both California and New York have obstacles to allowing them to redistrict. You know, the California would have to amend their state constitution to permit mid-decade redistricting. And so Governor Newsom is looking at options like that. Alternatively, the governor can ask the legislature to redraw the map, even though the state constitution is silent on the power to redistrict. So there is some limitations there, but, you know, Democrats are exploring their options there and see what they can do to push the envelope. New York has different rules. The state constitution prohibits mid-decade redistricting, you know, there may be some ways to get around that, so they're exploring that. I would also note that in the last redistricting that New York did, it was kind of nonpartisan, and it led to, I think, maybe a gain of one Democrat seat, even though they were looking for more pickup opportunities. And that is because the State Court of Appeals invalidated the state's map that would have been more favorable to Democrats because the court determined it to be partisan gerrymandering. So that is an obstacle for New York. I'm unclear if they'll be able to get around. So there'll be, this is going to be a storyline for the next, you know, year or so. And there'll be plenty of court fights and fights on the state level to see, you know, who can get the upper hand for the eventual balance of power after the 26th election. And so this is absolutely a storyline to pay attention to from that perspective.
Well, very interesting developments, and this all carries with it many implications, so we will see how this takes shape. If we stick with Congress, earlier this week we did see that House Speaker Mike Johnson called for an early start to the August recess period. What's behind that?
Yeah, well, first, you probably heard me say that August is my favorite month of the year, and partially it has to do with Congress going on recess. And I'm not just talking about, you know, lawmakers not being here, but, you know, it is an important time for staffers not only to take a break, but also, you know, to start working on projects for kind of the what's coming up in Congress, right? It is an excellent time where you get a break from the hustle and bustle. It feels like traffic is cut in 50% in D.C., so it is quite notable. But with that on the horizon, you know, and the passage of the One Big Beautiful Bill, you had kind of a transition going on, right? You know, you're done with the One Big Beautiful Bill, and you start thinking about what's next. And while the Congress started looking at what's next, you know, you had this flare-up about the Epstein files, and this has become a little bit of a political football, and, you know, whoever is holding it, you know, at that moment can easily get burned. So, you know, you're seeing a lot of motions to have DOJ release all the Epstein files, and it's kind of a back and forth that has actually kind of stymied Congress to move forward on a number of items. So I think, you know, Speaker Johnson is trying to, you know, hit the pause button, figure out the best way for Republicans to proceed on this Epstein issue, and maybe let some of the tensions die down after lawmakers, you know, go home, visit with constituents, spend a little time with their family, and try and, you know, come up with a plan on how to move forward when they get back in September after Labor Day.
So, Shane, as you pointed out, many staffers, members of Congress will be enjoying some downtime over the next few weeks. However, they will be thinking ahead to the fall and September when they return to Washington. So when Congress returns from its summer recess, what will be some of the top priorities and focuses?
Yeah, well, the number one priority will be government funding, right? You know, the end of the fiscal year is the end of September. So we're just over a month away from that. And, you know, Congress needs to move forward on government funding bills, or else we're going to be faced with a shutdown. And so this is going to be a high wire act. I think what you saw earlier this year, where Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, you know, essentially made a deal with Republicans to fund government operations and was immediately eviscerated by the left of the party. You know, so he may be less likely to work with Republicans on a funding solution, which, you know, increases the chances of a government shutdown starting on October 1st. So that's going to be a main attention draw. However, you also have a number of other items in place. You know, President Trump is currently asking the Senate to stay in session so they can continue passing some of his nominations. Some of those are, you know, sub-cabinet level, so like an assistant secretary or a deputy secretary in a different department across the government, which are, you know, key to implementing many of his policies. You know, we saw the one crypto bill become law just last week, and there's more work to be done on crypto, so I think lawmakers will be looking to that. I expect a busy fall here in Washington, D.C., but it remains to be seen how much they're going to get done, especially if there is a government shutdown, which will, you know, kind of halt work on all the other legislative items. So I know we'll talk about that more in September as, you know, that starts to come into focus and figure out if that's a likely or unlikely scenario that we see a government shutdown.
Well, Shane, thank you very much for dropping by to keep our listeners and clients informed on a range of topics that are top of mind. I hope you're able to enjoy some R&R over the next few weeks, and do, of course, look forward to picking back up with our conversation again soon.
Looking forward to it, Dan. I hope you have a great August yourself. Maybe enjoy some baseball too, but, you know, maybe not too much.
Definitely. Thank you, Shane. Appreciate it. Again, today we've been joined by Shane Lieberman, Senior Governmental Affairs Advisor with Governmental Affairs US here at UBS. And as always, I do want to point you, our listeners, to the latest Washington Weekly publication, which can now be located up on ubs.com/Washington Weekly. From UBS Studios, I'm Dan Cassidy. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide to you about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary or ask your UBS financial advisor for a copy.